So that's negative thinking. And I think that's part of step two. Well, you are a negative thinker. So in step one, I found out I had an unmanageable life. Step two, I found a manager. And step three, they asked me to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understand. And I don't know about you people, but I've always had a difficult time making a decision. As a matter of fact, before I came up here today, I was trying to decide whether I should go to the bathroom or not. Right about now, I don't know whether I've made the right decision or not. But that's what they asked me to do, and they mentioned this word, God. God as I understand it. And I made a decision. Thank God I did. For I found out I had an unmanageable life, and in step two, I found out I could find a manager. In step three, I turned my will and my life over to the care of this manager. Some of you people may say that that's a stupid way to do it. You know, I don't care what you say. But I'll tell you this. I will say this. That thank God I was stupid enough to do it. Because I've met a lot of people who are plenty smart. And I've 12-stepped them after they've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've talked to a lot of people in Al-Anon who have quit. Because they couldn't do these stupid things that I was stupid enough to do. And you know, sometimes we are so smart that we are stupid. And sometimes we are so smart that we die drunk because of this simple program, and we think it's too simple. And then they asked me to take a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. And I don't care whether you're an Al-Anon or whether you're an Al-Ateen or whether you're an Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope that I am talking to the wrong people. And I heard a guy kidding the other night over in Lawton about step four and five. And I'll tell you what, folks, please don't kid about something that might save your life. Because how can we possibly do something for ourselves if we don't know what is wrong with us? And this is what step four taught me. It taught me what was wrong with me. And when Dr. Tom talked about it this morning, he talked about resentment, fears, and sex. And that's what they ask us to do. To find out about our resentments and our fears and our problems in sex, in the sex department. And isn't it a fantastic thing? The three greatest sellers in the world today is the sensuous woman, sensuous man, and the sensuous couple. They are making a film. By Dr. Rubin, is it? All we always want to know about sex, but we're afraid to ask. And yet we never discuss it. And it tells us in the book that this is one of the problems. But if you read on, it doesn't tell us the gory things. The mad affairs, that's not what it's talking about. It's talking about our motives towards sex. And I think we should take a look at it, and if we do a step four properly, we will take a look at it. And if you're having a difficult time with step four, and I hope you're not, and I'll tell you the most difficult time with step four, and I'll tell you what it is a pencil and a piece of paper. Because it's pretty easy to lie to ourselves with a mental inventory. Most of us have had something to do with some sort of business. And we find that when we take an inventory that we have to write it down. It tells us in the book that we have to write it down. Why then do we say that we are satisfied by taking it up here? The reason we say that is because we are still lying to ourselves. I went around looking for people to help me take step four. And I'd meet people and they would say, don't worry about that. You know, my God. Easy does it, they tell me. Damn near killed me. You know? The reason they couldn't tell me I know today is that they hadn't done it themselves. And I can talk about step four, and thank God I can. And I only hope and pray that everybody in this room can talk about step four in the fact that they have done it. And that they can tell somebody else how to do it. And they can show them the way. And if you're having a difficult time, I'll tell you an easy way. Tonight when you go home, take a pencil and a piece of paper and figure out the person that you dislike most in this world. And there's somebody, you know, the brother that got all the money, sister that received all the love, boss that fired you because you were such a tremendous working alcoholic, the wife that divorced you because you drank a little bit too much. And write down everything that you dislike about this person. And don't be easy on them. Write it down with a real vengeance. And then when you're all finished, put your own name up top. Because usually what I find out is wrong with you is really what is wrong with me. And it'll work. And then we go on to that beautiful step five. It says, admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. You know, the only really tough thing about step five is step four. Because once you have taken step four, I guarantee that you will want to take step five. Because you have taken two-thirds of it. You've admitted to God and to yourself. And now all you have to do is go and talk to somebody else. And you know, really and truly, we're not as bad as we think we are. And I don't care whether we're an Al-Anon, Alateen, or Alcoholics Anonymous. But if you haven't done it, and if you're arguing with it, that you don't have to do it, please make yourself a little deal this afternoon that you're still going to argue about it. But after you've done it. And you will find out, you know, a beautiful thing. That you haven't got any argument. And arguments are hard work. And then they tell us about the beautiful step six. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And you see, they tell us in the book. And this isn't some book I bought from Canada, I bought it in the United States. Long time ago. So don't think this is some Canadian propaganda I'm giving to you. They tell us in this book that I bought in this beautiful country of yours that immediately after taking step five, that we spend a quiet time with ourselves reading step six and seven. They tell us in the 12 by 12, if we read it, the first line says, this is the step that separates the men from the boys, when you look at step six. For you see, we really haven't done too much. We found out we had an unmanageable life. We found a manager. We turned our will and our lives over to the care of that manager. We took a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. We went on and admitted to God, to ourselves, and wrapped off to somebody else the exact nature of our wrongs. And we're standing there with all of that, and then step six says, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And you know, some of us are afraid of becoming too good too fast. But don't be. I'm privileged to speak to hundreds and thousands of people. And I have never met a saint yet in Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, or Alateen. I've met a few of us who thought we should be. And those of us who didn't, we almost got drunk. But all it says, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So don't be afraid of becoming too good too fast. Reminds me of another story about a young AA that just got sobered up, attending a lot of meetings, and he had to go on a trip by train. And he got himself a compartment in AA literature, and he went off to dinner in a dining car, and he came back to his compartment, opened the door, and there were two beautiful ladies in his bed. And he said, "Look at girls. I've joined Alcoholics Anonymous. I've only stopped drinking for a short time. I'm trying to live a better life." Now, he said, "One of you has got to go." And then it says, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Many of us go around trying to define humility. We can have great discussion meetings on what humility is. That's not what it asks us to do in step 7. It says, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And when it says, humbly asked him, that there were sneaks. If I'm going to ask somebody, and especially who they're talking about in that step, I think it's God. I think that they're telling me to pray. I believe this. And remember, I'm stupid, and I figured this out. Just remember that. So for you smart people, it should be real easy. For it says, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And when we talk about prayer, I was a great one to tell people how to pray. I used to tell them to pray driving in their car, walking down the street, standing beside their bed. But I never, ever, ever told anybody to pray by getting down on their knees. You know why? Because old Cease couldn't get down there. And I can remember when I was delegate to New York, 57. There was a fellow there by the name of Shy Walker, and Shy is now dead. Shy told us a story about when he came out of penitentiary and he had a job, and how they told him the little things that he had to do to stay sober. And one of them was prayer. And how they told him each and every morning he should pray, and at night he should thank God for what had been given him that day. And he said he couldn't get down on his knees. And he said he was wearing high-top boots, and quite by mistake, one night he kicked his boots underneath the bed. And in the morning he had to get down on his knees to get the boots up. And he said he decided that seeing he was down there, he would say a few words. And every night he used to boot them under the bed. And you may laugh. I didn't have high-top boots, but it worked with low shoes, I can promise. And I don't have to kick the boots under the bed anymore, because I believe that humility is a simple, simple thing. It's the ability to stand and the willingness to kneel. And this is what it means to me. You know, when I came to this program, I couldn't say too many words without profanity. And I realized that it was what we call back in Canada beer parlor talk. And I asked to have this shortcoming removed, and it was removed. And I'm very grateful for it. I mention that little thing because it was a big thing to me. There are many, many, many other things that I asked to have removed, and they were removed because I helped him remove them. In step 8 it says, made a list, another list, of all the people we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And I had to make this list. And I found out it really wasn't so bad. And I found out that I had harmed Cease as much as I'd harmed anybody else. Because I'd lost my self-respect. And I wrote down the other people that I had harmed. And I became willing to make amends to them all. And in step 9, I went out and I made these direct amends to such people wherever possible. Except when to do so would injure them or others. And I went out and I talked to people and I apologized to people who didn't even know that I had hurt them. People that I had said that I had assassinated their character. And I went and told them I was sorry. And you know, the toughest amend that I had to make, and I tell this story wherever I talk, it was a lousy $3 amend. For you see, one night I was sitting in a high-class beer parlor back home. I was the only one in it. I was running a punch board. I don't know whether any of you have ever done that. We can't buy them in Canada. We have to smuggle them from the United States. And business wasn't too good because there was only the bartender and I there. Two fellas walked in and they asked me if I wanted a beer and I said I would. I didn't have any money. I'd left my wallet at home. Had a beer with them and then they asked me to go to a hockey game, an ice hockey game, and I said, well, I'd like to, but once again I'd left my wallet at home and they said, well, come on with us anyway. They put me in the back seat of the car with a 12-pack of beer. They got the front seat. We got out. They said, lock the door. I got out. I didn't lock the door. I lost them in the crowd. I went back. I stole the beer. I took the beer down to the Army, Navy, Veterans of Canada club rooms where I usually drank. And somebody stole it from me. And you should have seen the things that I told those people. Here I am, a disabled veteran. And I come in here and there's nothing but a bunch of thieves. And the next day I met these fellas and they said, we lost you at the hockey game last night. And I said, there was a big crowd and where neck you went. And they said, another funny thing happened. They said, somebody stole our beer. And I said, isn't that awful? Little town like Prince Albert, I said, 28,000 people. It's getting like little Chicago or Detroit. Can't leave anything laying around with these boosters. And they said, another funny thing, the door was locked. See, I was a good thief. I left it open and then locked it after. But I wasn't a big thief. Shortly after that, I sobered up. And one day, one of these fellas came in and he borrowed $10 from me. Shortly after that, my wife and I were coming from a drive-in theater one night, and she asked me to go and get her some cigarettes in this cafe, and I went in. And these two fellas were sitting there, and they yelled at me, and they said, this guy said, here's the $10 over you. And this thing was really bothering me. And I said, how much is a case of beer? And he said, Cease, never mind any beer. You've stop drinking, just stay this way, we like you this way. And I says, yeah, but just how much is a case of beer? And he said, look at Cease, never mind, we don't want you having any beer. And then I blurted it out. I was the guy that stole your beer the night we went to the hockey game. And then you know what? They wouldn't believe me. I wished I'd known that. I dropped $3 and went on my way. Now you may say, what is the, you know, what's so great about that? $3 amend. Well, we talk about going through these steps in sequence. And these are what, I'll just tell you what these 9 steps did to me. I was probably the most self-centered drunk in all of Canada. And as I went through these steps in sequence, they started to whittle each and every one a little bit of the self-centeredness off me. And they started to whittle me down to size. And when I made this amend, I admitted that I was a thief, a phony, a foul ball, a liar. And this is what I had to do to whittle myself a little more down to size. And that's why those amends are so important. It's not the $3. It's what it does to you. Because you know what it did to me? Those two fellas still live in Prince Albert. I still meet them on the street. They still grin at me. But you know what? Old Cease grins back. Ha ha. That's the object of the exercise. To clean your own side of the street so that you can walk comfortably in this program. And that's why it is so important. And that's why I tell that story. And then it says continue to take an inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. I wonder why they put that step right there. I think they put it there because just about this time they realized that we would sort of forget who we are, what we are, and where we come from. And I don't think it matters whether we're in Alateen, Al-Anon, or Alcoholics Anonymous. We all have the same program. But we would sort of forget and we'd become complacent. And it tells you in the 12 by 12 about complacency. And you see, I can talk about step 10 because it means so much to me. But you see, when I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years, I was working for the wealthiest man in the city of Prince Albert. And I was his right-hand man. And I decided that he should be the second wealthiest man. And I set out to make him the second wealthiest man. And I wanted all of this material things for myself. And I got some. But in getting them, material wealth, I became once again spiritually poor. And I forgot who I was, what I was, and where I'd come from. I went to meetings every week and blessed the people with my presence. I was going on 12-step calls and telling the people about the great things that had happened to me and look how wealthy I'd become. But I wasn't the AA member that I should have been. Thank God I got fired from that job. And I think that I got fired because that's God's will for me. I can understand that today. At that particular time, I wasn't thinking that way. He wasn't too smart a man, that fellow, to let this great hero go from his place of business. Just about this time, a little gal came to visit in the city of Prince Albert. She happened to be my cousin. She also happened to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't think she just came to visit. I believe that she was sent. She came 1,300 miles. And she must have been a little confused because the year before I told her how I just turned down this great big job. And she arrived in Prince Albert and I was unemployed. But she talked to me. And we talked about the beautiful things that we're supposed to talk about. And one day I was going and somebody mentioned Flin Flon, Manitoba to me here. I was going to a roundup to Flin Flon, Manitoba, along with a dear old fellow who's now passed away. His name was Day. And I don't think that he just happened to come along. I do believe that he was sent to see me. And he took me to this roundup, and it was many hundreds of miles. And he knew that I was having all of these problems. And he let me drive the car, and he let me take a look at Cease. And he never spoke to me. I came out of Flin Flon. I went into the city of Winnipeg. I spent a couple of days in a hotel room with myself and with God, trying to figure out what my future should be, and I came back to Prince Albert. But before I left to Flin Flon, that sweet little girl, last year when I was in Midland, Texas, I asked you people to pray for her because she had cancer. Fern passed away last July, but she was a beautiful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to share with you what she said to me. I went downtown and I bought myself a brand new suit. And I went down to see Fern before I was leaving for Flin Flon. And I stood up in front of her in my big egotistical way and I said, "Well, kid, how do I look?" And she said these simple words to me. She said, "You look real good on the outside, Cease. But how are you really on the inside?" And I went to Flin Flon thinking about that. I went to Winnipeg thinking about it. I came back to Prince Albert thinking about it. And I got back into Alcoholics Anonymous and I started doing the things that I was supposed to be doing all along. I went back doing institutional work. I went back doing the things within my group that I was supposed to be doing. Just because she said this to me. And then it comes to that beautiful 11th step where it says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand it. Praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. The very fact that I, orangutan, a man that had lost his self-respect, can stand here and talk about prayer and meditation is a miracle. The fact that I know what it means. The fact that I can humbly get down on my knees and pray. The fact that I can go out by myself and listen, which is meditating to me, is something. And what I can pray for is God's will for me. And just recently something great happened to me to prove this even more. Because you see, I have to have lessons all of the time. Regardless of how long I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. The store that I was talking about that I got fired from. I always had it in the back of the head that someday I would buy one of those stores. Because it was a chain of stores. 2 years ago I set up a company and bought one of those stores. A ladies' wear store. We expanded immediately. We did much more business than they ever did. And it was a tremendous operation. Except that we went bankrupt. And you know what happened? I tell this story because a fellow that I sponsored in March 12, 1956, very, very dear friend of mine, he came up and spent some time with me because I was president of this company and I was managing the store. And he came up when he knew I was having these problems. He came from Winnipeg, which is 600 miles, and he spent 3 days with me. And he went back to Winnipeg, and I don't know how many have ever been in bankruptcy court, but I would suggest if you haven't been there, that don't bother going. He phoned me the morning that I was going to bankruptcy court. And he said, "You know, Cease, I just figured something out on my way to work." And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "Maybe God decided that you shouldn't be in the ladies' wear business. Now, you don't really need that when you're on your way to bankruptcy court. But today I know that that was God's will for me. Because I have a good business in the fur business. And I think that my motive was just a little bit wrong about going into that ladies' wear business. And I think that God has shown me, and I can laugh about it today, and it's not very long ago that it happened, and the power to carry that out, that beautiful power that we get from this God as I understand him. And every one of us are entitled to it. But I don't know whether or not you have to do it this way. But I would suggest that if you're having problems, and if you're in Al-Anon or Alateen or Alcoholics Anonymous, it includes all of us, I would suggest that you pick up that book, or your Al-Anon book, or your Alateen book, and you read it. You know, that preamble is read at every meeting I've ever been to. I have never gone to a convention where it's not read. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And it says, here are the steps we took, which are suggested steps. And that's where people stop. But there's a few more words. It says, to recovery. And that's very important to me, because I want to be recovered. And I want to stay there. One day at a time. And they tell me I've just been granted a one-day reprieve, and I believe this. And then it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Many people ask me, Cease, how do you have a spiritual awakening? It tells us in the book. Surely to God I don't have to come 1,400 miles or however many miles it is to read the book to you. This is ridiculous. I am not that smart. I told you I was stupid. And thank God I am. That is how you have a spiritual awakening or a personality change. Is by taking these steps one by one in sequence. Are you going to tell me you don't have to do that? And that is true. You don't have to do anything that this Canuck tells you. But they told me you're supposed to share your experience, your strength, and your hope. And it would be a shame for me to fly all of these miles and not do that. And I can do it because it is an experience that I've had. And a personality change, if you really knew me, in the days before I came here, I wouldn't spend 4 seconds talking to you donkeys unless you were going to pay me. And to me, the fact that I can come here and I can spend time with you and I can love every one of you, to me, that's a personality change, believe me. And I love you for it. And then it says, we tried to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. Tells you a little bit different in Al-Anon. It tells you a little bit different in Al-Ateen. But you know what it tells you. And I've probably made 1,000 12-step calls. And every one of them has been a success. Some of the people are still drinking. Some of them are in mental hospitals. Some of them are dead. Some of them are in jails. Some of them have short terms of sobriety. Some of them have long terms of sobriety. But the reason I say that every 12-step call has been a success is the fact that old Cease is still sober. And that's what they asked me to do, was to try to carry the message. And that's what I've done. And it's a story I like to tell about a little boy. Story about a young member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he went to this old member of Alcoholics Anonymous and he said, I'm going to quit. And the old member said, why are you going to quit? He said, well, I'll tell you. When I came here, they told me I wouldn't have to do anything. They told me it wouldn't cost me anything. They told me there were no dues or there were no fees. They told me just to come here. And he said, now they want money. They're passing the hat for this and they're passing the hat for that. They want money to send off to our General Service Conference. They want money to send to our State Assembly. They want me to go on 12-step calls. They want me to go to conferences. They want me to go and sit in the hospital with some guy that's drunk. They want me to go to prisons to do this 12-step work, and he said, I'm getting sick and tired, I'm going to quit. And the old member says, you know, son, I don't blame you a bit. Because, he says, your story reminds me of the story of my life. For he said, when my wife and I were very young, we were blessed with a bouncing baby boy. But he said, the moment that child was born, he started to cost me money. And somebody told us that three could live as cheap as two. But he said, my wife had to stay in the hospital. I had to take the kid home. I had to hire people to look after her. I had to hire people to look after him. Every time I went downtown, I had to buy something for that kid. Finally, he started to creep around. He needed toys. Finally, he needed a tricycle. Finally, he went into public school. The tricycle wasn't big enough. He needed a bicycle. Finally, he went into high school, and then the bicycle wasn't good enough. He needed a motorcycle, and he needed an old car. He needed extra money to take the girls out. He needed extra money to go away to summer camp, extra money for sporting goods equipment. And he said, I was like you. I was getting sick and tired of it. But then he said, something happened. He said, in the final year of high school, that boy of ours died. And he hasn't cost us a penny since. Do what you like with that story. But let's keep this beautiful fellowship alive. And it tells us to practice these principles in all our affairs. What principles are they talking about? I believe they're talking about the principles that I learned as I took these steps in sequence from 1 to 12. And you know, we better be really careful about these principles. Because it tells us that we're based on attraction rather than promotion. And you know, sometimes when some of us are going around with our chin on our navel, there's not going to be too many people attracted to us. And when we become owly, and it's easy at this conference to be kissing and a hugging and a rubbing up against. It's real easy. But what about when we get in that car and we're driving home? Maybe your wife forgot one of the bags back at the hotel. And she mentions it. As you're rushing to Sant' Angelo. Or maybe the husband forgot to put gas in the car and you run out of gas. And he's the idiot. Maybe tomorrow morning we walk into the office, into the place that we work. Everything falls in on us. And we forget about these beautiful smiles and this love and everything that we've had all weekend. That's where it's tough to practice these principles in all our affairs. It's easy at a conference. But when we get out into that cruel old world, it's a little tough. And I'm going to steal a story from Millie. Apparently she told it last year. And it's a story. First of all, I have to tell the story about the drunk. Not about the Alan. About a drunk that was so miserable that he gave his wife a cemetery plot for Christmas. And the next Christmas, she said to him, what are you going to give me this year? And he said, hell, you haven't used last year's gift as yet. And there's a story about the beautiful Al-Anon, who was gone, and her husband just wouldn't stop drinking. But she was going to Al-Anon anyway. And she was from Oklahoma or Texas or somewhere. She had a lot of money anyway. She had to be from one of the places. She decided to take this dear alcoholic on a trip. And she took him overseas. And he was drunk when they left home, and he got drunker on the plane, and he got drunker when they landed over there. And then they went on a little tour, and they came to a wishing well. And they stood beside this wishing well, and they threw their money in. And by God, that poor old alcoholic, he fell in the damn thing and drowned. And you know what that Al-Anon gal said? She said, holy hell, this thing really works. Oh, I don't know whether that's practicing the principles or not. But we got a beautiful bunch of principles that we are privileged to have. Because there are a lot of people today roaming around that haven't got any principles. And I think we ought to be a little careful when we're talking to our youth of today. I'm privileged to do a lot of work with youth. I'm privileged to speak to a lot of high schools. I'm privileged to speak to a lot of youth organizations, and I'm privileged to have a real communication with a lot of youth, especially Alateen. And I'm very grateful for this. And it reminds me of a story that we should be a little careful, you know, of the way we speak to our youth. Adults today are telling youth not to smoke with a cigarette in their hand. I guess they mean don't smoke pot. Some people are telling their kids not to drink with a cocktail in their hand. They're telling them not to spend money as they're spending money like as if it's going out of style. And you know what we're doing. We're telling us the many, many things. And I think that we're scared of youth. And I think that youth are looking for spiritual guidance. I really do. And I know they are because I give them the same talk that I give to you people. The kids in high school. And they come up and they want to talk. And they want to talk about it. And they want to talk about some sort of a program that they need. And this story is about the great Vincent Peale and Eddie Rickenbacker. And one time they were asked to make a film. And they were supposed to be on the set at 3 o'clock, and they went there at 3 o'clock. Wasn't anybody there. 3:30, a few people strolled on. 3:45, a few more. Finally, it was after 4 o'clock, and the great Vincent Peale, he had another appointment at 5 o'clock. And finally, he just completely lost all his serenity that he talked about on television. And he went up to the producer and he said, "Look, you told me to be here at 3 o'clock and I was here. And I'm a busy man." And he said, "None of your people were here and it's now going for 5 o'clock and I have another appointment at 5 o'clock. Eddie Rickenbacker's a busy man." And he looked over and there was old Eddie Rickenbacker. And he had a rocking chair. And he was sitting under this big oak tree and he's rocking. And Vincent Peale rushes over to him and he said, "Look, they told us to be here at 3 o'clock and we were here. It's now heading for 5 o'clock. And they're still not ready. And you sit there rocking like an idiot. What's with you?" And old Eddie said, "I am just trying to practice what you preach." And I think we should be a little bit careful. Because if we're going to preach it, we better try to practice it. And I think that's what it means about the principles. Now, believing here today, I'll be going over to Dallas. I'm going to miss every one of you. Because once again at another conference, I've come to learn to love a whole lot of you. And I'll feel probably a little bit like the little 20-year-old girl that had a sugar daddy, 75-year-old millionaire. And one night they're sitting in this big posh place. And he said, "Honey, if I was to lose all of my millions, would you still love me?" And she said, "I'd still love you, but I'd sure as hell miss you." And I'm going to leave here today. I'm going to love you and I'm going to miss you. And that's how I feel. But I'm going away with a lot more AA in my heart as I go away from every conference. I'm going away with a lot of newfound friends. And I want you to know that I appreciate everything that you have done for me this weekend, because you've done more than you could ever realize. For you see, sometimes people think that speakers have all of the answers. And you don't realize that it's things like the little gal from Amarillo. And I know that's not the proper way to pronounce it, but it's a little joke between her and I. Because I met her a year ago last January, and she arrived here yesterday and came up and said, "Do you remember me?" And I remembered her. And I remembered all about her. And this is a miracle, because this is not the way I used to be. I didn't remember anybody, because I suffered from a horrible disease of conceit, where I thought that old Cease was the greatest. And you know, conceit is a very, very strange illness. It makes everybody else in the world sick, but the person that's got it. And I want you to ponder over that one a bit. And I've met a lot of people that I needed and that needed me. And you've been very good to me. And as I go home, by way of Texas and Florida and Louisiana, every one of you will be traveling with me, because I love you. And I think I can only tell that story the way I feel by telling another little story. Just outside of Omaha, Nebraska, there's a little town called Boys Town. And as you drive up to this little town, you see a statue. It's a statue of one little boy carrying another little boy. And you can tell by the way that he's bent over, by the sweat on his brow, as he trudges through the snow, that he's having a very difficult time. But underneath are simple words, something to this effect. "No, Lord, he is not heavy, for he is my brother." And that's what you people mean to me. And I'm going to close this talk the way that I close every talk that I ever give. You all look real good on the outside today. How are you really on the inside? Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you, Cecil. I think the second time I heard Cecil talk, he talked on the 12 steps, and I was definitely ready for that today. And I want to thank each and every one of you for asking me here again. And I want to thank each and every one of you for being here. I love each and every one of you as I do my home group. I need you people, and I'd like to say, as I've heard Wilson say, I think I heard him saying this second time I heard him speak, and he mentioned it again last night. For those of you who can try it again, goodbye, because I might not see you again, and for the rest of you, so long.
I wasn't going to tell you this, but Cease wants me to tell you. Max is making it possible from Walter's Max and Jack and Hoot and George and Maury from Lawton. We're going to fly up to Canada in May for their round robin or for whatever they call it up in Prince Albert. And we're really looking forward to seeing how that Canuck handles things up there. Now, I'm not going to goof up this time. I'm sure by the applause and everything that everyone wants you to have this, Cecil, as a memento. Very quickly, I'll tell you that the money is fine. We're in real good shape. We might have a little bit of money left over to start with next year. I'll grant you one thing, that I'm quite sure that when our treasurer and secretary figures this thing up, if we have any excess money, we'll send it to our general service office. That's where the money will go if we have anything over and above a little bit to operate on. Now, I just got to eat out. Old Gordon here has got 5 years, and this is his birthday, and I want you to give him a hand. Stand up, Gordon. There is a man here who I decided when I talked to him here a couple of years ago that he was too damn smart to ever get sober, and he celebrated a year. Bill, where you at? Bill H. from down to Lawton. Kind of hard for me to admit that I'm wrong on a deal like that. See, I was enlisted and he is a commissioned officer. But they too can make it, you know. Now then, as this whole thing has gone along, I have goofed up everything. But there's two guys here that I want some special recognition for, and I know our group does and the rest of you do. We have two ministers in this town that are very concerned about the alcoholic and are real good people, and they work with us, and it's Reverend Andy Campus and Reverend Ray Wood. Will you two stand up, please? See, I've got to get out of a trap. I asked Ray to be down here to close this thing up, and we got another way to close it. And if I hadn't give him some recognition, that Baptist preacher had been mad at me the rest of the year, see. So I'm going to take the thunder away from him so he can't have a resentment. But we have a little different deal that we're going to close this with, and we hope that you will like it. I want to know one thing. Would you people like to participate in another event such as this next year? I'd like to know. I think that I can speak for our group and our district and even the AAs in Oklahoma. We appreciate from the bottom of our hearts the people who have taken time to drive and to take time away from your families and your business and your endeavors to come and help make this a success. And we thank you very, very much. I think it's fitting and proper. Of course, we will close this with the Lord's Prayer, but I think it's fitting and proper that we leave here with this thought in mind. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. There are still refreshments and coffee and everything. You don't have to rush off. Jackie, will you come here, please? And if you stand and join hands, Jackie is going to sing the Lord's Prayer for us.
Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us.